Hello.
I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Kim.
And it really should have just started, I'm Kelsey and I'm confused, like an AA, but for Crescent City. Season of the Massive Fans Book Club podcast. Today, we're rolling straight into season 6, episode 1. I say this because I have not let Kim know. I'm renumbering them. I know this is just the intro, but this is number 1. Otherwise, we're going to fuck up our numbers later on. We all know that. this episode is a little longer than a bonus. Which is why I almost didn't get a number, but it's a little shorter than normal because we're only covering the prologue because I didn't understand anything I read. That's pretty much why. You can be watching this on Spotify. If you are, you'll see less long, you'll hear less long pauses because you'll see just our totally laughing, can't breathe faces. If you're listening, my bad.
Sorry. So we're on the prologue, and poor Kelsey, I was trying to explain to her, I said, you know, the prologue, this is how this book gets set up. The plot for this book and really the next book are kind of set up in this book. and the prologue in particular is what sets everything up. I will say we finally do get to meet the Hind, who, if we remember, was part of Sandriel's Triari.
Okay, so that I sort of remembered, but then when we eventually get the description, I was like, didn't remember that. Did we know?
Well, we never really got a description of her before. We just knew that she was part her. She was called the Hind, and she was part of Sandriel's Triari.
Right. We didn't know she Pollux, she's a deer. Well, shifter, right? But she's a deer?
Right. Yeah.
We have deer. Okay, I'm sorry. I was caught off guard. We have deer, some
animal shifters.
The powers again, that be.
Okay, so again, this goes into that whole Throne of Glass thing.
Okay, and
anybody who's read Throne of Glass that has also now gotten into Crescent City will know exactly what I'm talking about, and you're all going to be nodding your head like me going, uh-huh, Crescent City and Throne of Glass, this is one of those
which
Easter
is
eggs.
Great, love that for that sake. I'm just having a really hard time, okay, personally, you know, we've had this conversation, I have a hard time with shifters anyway, I think the concept is dumb, I don't enjoy it, but that's fine, that's a me problem. But I was like, wow, I really thought that, like, you'd shift into something way more terrifying. Like, not like
werewolf?
Deer. Yeah, not like fucking like deer bologna in my freezer. Like, you know what I mean? Like, not something
that
we can
deer bologna in my freezer, thank you.
I'm just saying, like, something, not something we can bologna is not what I thought that you would shift into. Like,
okay,
I mean,
fair
you don't
enough.
Have like lion bologna for obvious reasons.
Like, fair enough. And maybe, okay, so. I mean, we'll go into some detail about this prologue, but I just have to laugh, you guys, because, like, it really does kind of set up the plot, but be that as it may, yeah, you know, we finally meet the Hind, and she's a shifter. She's a
deer shifter.
Anyway. Like, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go. We've met.
Well, there you go. There's the prologue. No, I'm kidding.
There's the prologue. No, not really. So anyway, but, you know, I mean, the prologue, as I told Kelsey, I have feelings about the prologue. I remember when I first read it.
Yeah.
Right after it came out. And I think I told you, I was like, the fuck?
I sort of remember you, like, came into work and you were like, I was like, oh, like, how do you like it? And you were like, I don't know. Like, we were talking about, I can't remember for sure if that was the beginning of this one or if it was the beginning of Silver Flames, but I just remember one of them, you came in and you're like, I don't know how I feel.
No, that was the beginning of Silver Flames, because I was still working there.
Oh, right.
Sky and Breath, we weren't working together.
You're right,
just
you're
talking
right.
All the time. And
yes,
I was like,
there you go. Yeah,
the hell is she doing to us?
Yeah, I just remembered that you walked it. I vividly remember the day you walked it. Oh, how's your new bug? I don't know.
But we all know how Silver Flame starts out. I mean, you can't blame me. I was,
you
like,
know? Huh. Yeah, in retrospect.
I don't know how I'm feeling about this.
Totally fair.
I just don't know how I'm feeling about this. But this prologue definitely It takes a lot for me. It took me a lot to get into it. In fact, reading the whole book, I was just like, I get the point. I understand it. But I was like, dear God. Some of this is, wow. Some of this is kind of hard. And not necessarily in a good way hard.
It goes back to, and I'm going to keep bringing this up, because even though I know I say it all the time, I think it's like, you know, now we're shifting back into Crescent City world, out of ACOTAR world. And again, coming out of ACOTAR into Crescent City, which, like we did with book one, where we came out of ACOWAR and went into Crescent City book one. Now coming out of Silver Flames and going into Crescent City book two, it reminds me again what I said about, like, you know, you can like fantasy, but not all fantasy is the same. And so it's like kind of a weird thing when you're talking to humans out in the world where you're like, I like fantasy. And it's like, that doesn't really necessarily mean we've read any of the same books or like any of the same
things.
And
or same authors and subgenres within fantasy, because there's so many types of subgenres within fantasy.
Right. And what's super weird to me is I don't have a hard time believing that people read ACOTAR and then also read Crescent City. That's not shocking to me. It's shocking to me that it's the same author.
Well, the one good thing about that to me, though, is it shows her ability to be diverse in her writing style, which is amazing. Yeah,
which is cool. Again, as long as you don't assume that you're just because you are the same person as the author, it was weird to assume your readers were the same as well. Because, like, I do not enjoy this.
Well, another good example would be Rebecca Yarros. I mean, okay.
Sure.
For example, Fourth Wing was her first foray into fantasy. She's a romance writer.
Sure.
Well-known romance writer. I mean, she'd been writing romance, you know, and now all of a sudden she's like, I feel like writing a fantasy. So, I mean, in that sense, I kind of have to respect her, because she did know if it was going to fly with the fantasy audience. Like, was all of these things. And it's like viral how well it's done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In fact, her Fourth Wing and Iron Flame books have done better than most of her romance novels.
Well, but then that's what's also so interesting was all of the hate that Iron Flame got from, admittedly, people who loved Fourth Wing, not even like from Outskirts, which is what you expected when Fourth Wing came out. So it's a crapshoot.
Still haven't gotten to it, though. I'll be honest, thanks internet, you've kind of pretty much spoiled the whole damn book.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, I don't think I'm going to hate it, I guess. Like, even Crescent City, like, this is not, I don't know, this book is not, this whole series is not what I would consider my personal favorite genre of fantasy.
Right,
I don't mind urban fantasy. And urban fantasy tends to be more modern. I don't mind it at all. While reading all of this, I was reading another urban fantasy series that was actually kind of interesting. You had humans, demons, gods, shifters. I'm missing. Oh, and angels. It was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like it was interesting, but it was all set in modern day. So it's not that I can't read modern urban fantasy. It's just, you know, I guess because I read ACOTAR and then Throne of Glass and then this came along. Yes, I like it. Yes, I see all the Easter eggs and it's exciting. I just personally, my preferences for her more traditional, so to speak, fantasy ACOTAR or Throne of Glass, which
really
need to get
point.
On I'm gonna really start poking at you, but
I know
that being said, it is what it is. So we talked about this, and I have to share, for those of you watching this, you're gonna laugh, so I want you all to notice on my sweatshirt, if you can tell, these are angel wings. So when I grabbed this today to put it on, I was just like, oh, it's kind of cold and I have to go to a doctor's appointment with my son later.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to have to sit in the waiting room. It's going to be cold. You know, doctor's offices are never warm. Right.
Right.
So I'm going to be like, you know, I just kind of want to be able to be comfortable. And so I grabbed this sweatshirt and it, Angel Wings, we're doing Crescent City and Hunts an Angel.
Weirdly appropriate.
Not only is that weirdly appropriate, but it's from Depeche Mode's tour that I went to go see the concert in the fall, which was the Memento Mori tour, which, if we all recall from Crescent City 1, is the Seine and the Meat District. Yeah, so it was weird. And the Seine after their last album. Anyway, it was just kind of, it's strange and random that I'm wearing the most appropriate t-shirt or sweatshirt at the moment. And I didn't even think about it when I put it on. So, you know, what the heck? And so for
one of those
Marcy
days.
And Nikki, who both know, you know, you can enjoy the joke because I truly wasn't thinking. I just grabbed the sweatshirt and put it on today. You know. Hey gals, you know, enjoy the humor. Because I certainly figure, you know, it's appropriate. I like it.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm wearing, you know, a sweatshirt with angels on it, and it's Memento Mori. If I could turn my sweatshirt around, it says Memento Mori on the back.
That's amazing.
So yeah, so, you know, I mean, without trying to, I'm wearing a Crescent City themed thing here. wasn't even trying. So random small thing. So yeah, you know, I mean, I will tell you, this prologue really sets up the plot though for this book and for the next book.
That's kind of like all that like made me feel better. Okay, before we get into it, because that was my concern where I was like, does this even matter? Like, what was the point of this? Kim assured me that it does, so that made me feel better. And we're going to get into that in a second real quick. Like we said, we're just going to cover the prologue. And then we're going to take a minute to talk about the TV show drama for ACOTAR. And then we're going to talk about the other books, podcasts, movies, all that have been like rolling around in our brains. So you won't get any songs today, but you will get that. So if you want to listen to the end, you can get some ideas of things you could be listening to or watching and all that stuff. So that's where this is going.
Absolutely. But okay, before we get too far, and it's too late.
It's already too late.
It already is too late because I already dropped an F-bomb. This podcast is not for little ears.
Yeah, duh, obviously. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, there was that. Absolutely. So with that, Kim, what the fuck did I read? Like, you're going to just, like, this episode is going to be Kim putting that prologue into tiny words for dum-dums like myself.
I mean, all right, I'm not going to, like, detail it out, because, please, I want you guys to actually read the book.
Right, and know also, the last... and also because it doesn't, like, probably matter. like the little details, probably, like, I got caught off for, like, 20 minutes trying to, like, figure out, like, whose brother's sister's friend, you know what I mean? Like, I got down a rabbit hole, and I was like, oh, wait, we're not naming these people? They're not coming back, it doesn't matter.
Right. So it opens with this character, Sophie, who, if you guys remember when we read the first book, they talked about there were rebels. There was it's almost like Star Wars. There's a rebel base. There are rebels.
Okay. Right. So on that note, that's what I started to say and never came back around to say, which is, remember, friends, we know that we lured you in with Lord of the Rings style fantasy in the sense of, like, you know, like hobbits, beings, questionable electricity. Now we're in like Star Trek, or in this sense, Star Wars. So yes, please, for those of us where, okay, just so you remember, I am the person that at like 8 years old saw Star Wars, got confused, and was yelling at the TV that I thought Yoda was a planet. So just so you know, we've grown up since then, but 8 year old me is still inside my head going, I thought the Asteri was a planet. Like, I don't, but like, dumb it down for us. Dumb it down.
Sure. So anyway, so there are these rebels. Remember, Philip Briggs was a rebel, right? And we know that they're fighting against the Asteri and the Asteri's rule. So that's kind of important. Philip Briggs was also a human.
Yes. And okay. Thank you. Sorry. I was going to say, just know that this whole time I'm going to remember what you're saying much slower than you say it. So when you get on to like your fourth and fifth character, I'm going to go, yes, I remember Philip Briggs. This is not because my sound is slow. This is not an internet problem. This is because my brain software is slow.
It's okay. So, but what I want you to understand, so this opens up with this character, Sophie, who is a human, who is a rebel. Okay, so we're going to start there, which I'm not going to lie, you guys. When I read this the first time, I was like, the mama, who, okay.
The hoobity wants it and the hoobie wear.
Yeah, not only does this have to do with Sophie and meeting Sophie, and she's at this, apparently she's at a death camp. Okay, like, we knew the Asteri were pretty horrible, fucked up things, but Jesus Christ, having Nazism?
Yes, okay, right. So I will fully admit that I read the first sentence three times, closed the book, contemplated calling you and being like, I'm out. Today, opened it again and was a little still bothered and carried on. Yeah. So like that's what I was supposed to get from that. Right. Because that's also what I got from that, where I was like, oh, so basically we're doing a Holocaust with. Yeah.
Holocaust/the Russian communism.
Sure.
Kind of.
Sure. Which is not a new concept. I mean, this is very. It's just there was the verbiage choice that made that so abundantly clear. We've seen this before. If you've read, the Grishaverse is similar. The, you know, Witcher universe even is sort of similar. God, King Arthur stories can be similar. The idea that, you know, a race comes through and goes, no, you're other, you're weird, we can't have this, and then shut them down hard is not new. So there's no real problem with this. I just wasn't expecting that to be the first line of the book.
Yeah, no, and I understand that. Okay. I mean, like I said, it's a little off-putting. But... And I don't want anyone to get upset when I talk about Soviet era similarities. Historically, we do know that the Soviets had death camps in Siberia that they would send political opposition people to, or people that they deemed less or other. You know, it in a weird way, it's kind of timely with Navalny's death and some of the stuff we're hearing. Anyway, I don't know. I'm not gonna point anything out. I'm just saying, this is stuff we're hearing. Yeah. Whether it's right or wrong, I don't know, and I'm not even gonna try and go there politically.
Right.
I'm just putting it out there, like in the news. This is, you know, stuff that
which I was
being reported.
Yeah, which I think goes off of what I said. Please ignore a very angry dog.
Puppy dog's outside, I guess. She must have doggies
Amazon
outside.
Package time, y'all.
Oh, even better. Must protect my house. So please.
But yeah,
guys.
It's like, yeah, we're not trying to like be political about it, but we, as we've discussed before, like sometimes certain stories lead, like, obviously are connected to current like world events, you know what I mean? And it was just shocking. That's the hardest thing to me about like the Crescent City book, when I joke that like, oh, okay, this is more Star Trek, this is more Star Wars. It's also more closely related to like the things that you actually see. It's a lot easier to be a step away and go, well, I ain't gonna meet Coast J. That ain't happening. Like, you know what I mean? I don't have a harp. I'm good. Like, you know what I mean? It's a little easier.
Don't have the Magikarp, yeah.
Right. It's a little easier to read those things sometimes versus this. I will say, yeah, I read the prologue and I was like, I was not mentally prepared for these descriptions. So there's your trigger warning. I don't really know what to say that trigger is, other than just be in the right mindset going into this, that this is a lot heavier and a lot closer related to real life events than other books and other chapters will be. Carry on.
It's fine. No, I mean, I'm thinking about how to do this. I mean, you know, she's in a death camp. And I mean, the way it's described, if you've ever seen video or if you've even been to like Auschwitz or Bergen-Belsen.
Or if you've read the eighth grade standby, what is that? Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
Yeah, I mean, the description is eerily... And I mean, there's plenty of film and photos that you can watch of the concentration camps that the Nazis used. So I'm just saying the description is kind of eerily similar to that, I guess. Apparently, Sophie is not your typical normal human. She has managed to make the drop. So technically, she is Vanir. She is not
a human. She's not technically human.
And she's there because she has a younger brother who she had been separated from, and come to find out she has finally tracked him down and he is at this camp. And she's here to rescue her brother. So, cool. We're gonna have a little rescue here going.
And if you're like me and you've been trying for three pages to figure out where in the Crescent City timeline that we already think is wiggly-wobbly, timey-wimey, weird stuff, if you've already been trying to figure out where this fits in, if you're like me, you picked up on her whole description of the illegal drop center, the first light, all of that. Okay, so pretty close to what we already know. So that's a nice hint. That's helpful.
Yeah. So being technically, since she's made the drop and she's Vanir, she can actually switch between being a human and being Fey. And so cool, right?
Could be useful.
Could be useful. But she did make her drop in an illegal drop center, which is pointed out. She finally decides, when she finally gets a hold of her brother, and they connect and they realize, sibling, mine, yours, kind of type thing. She does try to escape with him. His name is Emil, and she has other kids that are there that she's going to try and get to escape as well.
Yeah, because correct me if I'm wrong. They haven't seen each other in 3 years. But then when they meet up, like, she 3 years, she looks basically the same. Obviously, he's grown up a lot, but he doesn't want to leave without the other kids, right? He's the one who was like, "No, I want to take them with me." Yeah,
fair. I mean, I don't blame him. You know,
yeah. I just thought it was like, it's interesting to know, like, when Sophie made this plan, these kids were not part of the plan.
Very true. And so it does complicate things. And you realize, you know, yes, she's a rebel. She's relatively high up. And she had to do a lot of pretty horrible, awful things.
Yeah.
To be able to get to where she is, to get the intelligence that she needed to find her brother and to get into this camp. So you're kind of like, okay, this is kind of gritty and...
Yeah.
And just hard.
Well, it's very much, in fairness, it's setting Sophie up. I thought there were two really interesting things I picked up on Sophie and just like this whole set, like whole prologue. So it doesn't necessarily have to be said here, but she had done some pretty horrific things, but she had done them the entire time with the plan of using that to be able to get to her brother. So to me, that was very much like, we've seen that kind of, that's a Hunt mindset. That's a Reese mindset. That's a, you know, that's a mindset we're used to seeing. So I liked that for her in the sense that, you know, she's a little bit more the gray villain good guy that we usually see in male characters. So that was kind of cool. And then also way back on page one, she's talking about when she first got here, she was afraid that she'd be found out immediately. But basically the stench of all of everything she had been through since she got
humans and everything
helped mask her, and she said that she had basically become invisible to those looking for her, and it reminded me of Pharaoh with the Midgard worm when she was in the mud and she had become Reese's, like, she just became invisible. I was like, wow, so Sophie's a little bit like these, like, I just thought it was cool because it was like, oh, look at these callbacks, she's very similar to other characters we already have. So I thought that was cool.
Absolutely. And the guards are what we call dread wolves.
That's when I realized I couldn't remember anything about this universe, and I had to stop real, think real hard for a minute and, like, get myself in the right place.
They're kind of like werewolves, but on steroids.
That's
the only way I can describe it. But they're not lichen. And there's a difference between being a lichen and a werewolf. So, I don't even want to go into fantasy characters and all of that. So, and shifter fantasy, because I do read it and I enjoy it. It's me and my own weirdness. Anyway.
Okay, hurts my brain, but that's just a me problem.
Not all of us read the same stuff. I get that. Though you and I do read a lot of the same stuff. There are a few things we don't enjoy.
When we get to the end of this, I'll ask a question about the definition of urban fantasy, because that has been ruggling around in my mind for a hot minute. So we will talk about that at the end of this episode.
Okay, no problem. Anyway, another character comes up in we have a couple characters that come up in this whole area of the rebels. Apparently her Sophie's boss is Pippa, who is the leader of an elite unit who had to basically get her approved to do this mission. But Pippa did do that. And Pippa is pointed out, and I want to tell you guys that the ones that have actual names that we get in the prologue are important. They do come back.
Okay.
They're relevant.
That was the thing. I was like, as I was reading, I was hoping that was the case, but then I was trying not to think too hard. So that's why I had to come back and ask you before we started recording, I was like, Kim, does this matter? Like, if it does, yes. Great. If it doesn't, just tell me now.
Yeah, no, so Pippa is important. She comes back in both this book and I won't lie in the next one. So, and yes, I just finished reading Silver Flames. And if you go to our Discord, I just posted a GIF and it was just like mind blowing.
Whatever that was.
Not Silver Flames, Flame and Shadow. Jesus, I'm tired.
You're fine. I was like, no, Flame and something else.
Because we were talking about Silver Flames. So I have, Flame in my brain and Flame and Silver Flames.
They don't do themselves any favors.
Anyway, so suffice it to say, she does continue on, and through, but Sophie is an agent. She is a spying agent for these rebels. And, apparently she works with another agent. And she has information quite literally in her brain that could end the war against the Asteri. And her counterpart that she works with, one of the agents that she works with, who's kind of sort of a double agent, his name is Agent Silverbow. And he is there to help her when she gets her brother and these kids away from the camp. Like, he is actually there to get her to safety and get them to safety. They're trying to escape, and the Dread Wolves have arrived. Dread Wolves. Coffee hasn't hit yet, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, no. The not enough Dread coffee in the world. Wolves
have arrived. And so Sophie tells Agent Silverbow, take the kids. She's going to hold the Dread Wolves off, and she will meet them. And not only do the Dread Wolves show up, but the Hind shows up. And again, I mentioned the Hind was part of Sandriel's Triari. And she was not in Luniathan when Sandriel was killed.
Right.
She was on a, and I say this with air quotes, mission elsewhere. So this is kind of happening at that time period. And I want you guys to all just kind of keep that in mind.
Yeah. On that note, also, in case we're wondering about Silverbow, right? Like, he and Sophie are a thing. Like, that's why he's doing what he's doing. He's doing it for her. So when she's like, no, go, he doesn't want to, but he's going to listen to her because, well, you know, he loves her and she loves her brother, so.
Yeah. They are an item.
They's a thing.
Very much an item. We come to find out Sophie really is Vaynir. She was Vaynir to begin with. She's not a human. She's not really a witch or anything of that nature. She is what they call Thunderbird, which is kind of a cool thing. She can
cool name, can, but then I was also like, "You're a what?"
But well, she can use lightning.
Well, which is kind of cool. We learned that after a hot minute, but yeah, when we first found out the word Thunderbird, I'm like, "Do I know what that is?"
The fuck.
Yeah,
the fuck?
I'm sorry. Do I know what that is? I don't think I know what that is. I, again, had to pause for a minute, be like working on like the dictionary in my brain, being like, have we heard this before? I really don't think we have.
Yeah. So anyway, she's the Thunderbirds. She was going to be able to make the drop no matter what, because she does have enough Fey blood that this wasn't going to be an issue. And she's a very rare form. In fact, the Thunderbirds were literally hunted almost to extinction.
Which was fascinating to find out as well. Yeah.
By the Asteri, no less. Because apparently their magic is a problem for the Asteri.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So anyway, Silverbow gets the kids away. They get on a boat called the Bodegraven. And he ends up being shot in the escape because they are being chased by Imperial forces.
God, I say, as my daughter would
rebels
say.
Rebels and the Imperial forces. Like, it's, wow, it is. It's like Star Wars.
Yeah, I was going to say, or as my daughter would say, the bad guys.
Yeah.
We've been watching a lot of Disney movies where all a 2.5-year-old can understand is like, good guys, bad guys.
They're definitely the bad guys.
But that was bad.
I just, you know, in a recent interview, Sarah J. Maas does, like, I'm totally going on crazy tangents here. Sarah J. Maas does talk about the fact that as a child, she was into Star Wars. And I can see it in
here. Yes, I saw Rebels that interview. I did see that.
We have the Empire, the Imperial forces. Anyway, I'm sorry. My brain just made that
connection. You're right. I did remember that. That was recent. That was her Today Show interview, wasn't it? When the
I think so.
Yeah.
She also talked about it on Kelly Clarkson, too.
Oh, sure.
So anyway, he's been shot with a bullet. Had a core of Gorsian Stone. If we remember from Crescent City 1, Gorsian Stone can suppress the magic of a fey, an angel, anything. It can kind of make your magic not work. Anyway, they're being surrounded by these submersible warships, aka submarines. There's another rebel ship further out. Waiting to meet up with the Bodegraven, and Pippa is on that ship.
Right.
And come to find out, Sophie's brother, Emil, has the same power as Sophie.
Yep.
And apparently it's even stronger.
Which was also confusing to me about, like, how did he end up here?
I think he's known for a long time that he what he was, but he hasn't been able to make the drop.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah, we'll go with that. Let's go with that logic, because otherwise I don't really understand how we ended up in this situation if he and his sister are so freaking powerful. Like, anyway, it's cool.
Watered down. They're not pure. They're not pure because as it's explained, you know, Sophie's great-grandmother was a full-blooded Thunderbird and had mated with a human. And so they're, even though the gifts are passed on, they are diluted and kind of watered down. They're not as strong. The further you get from the original source, the more diluted the power is.
Sure.
It makes sense, right? So you're 4 generations away from the original source. So anyway, he uses his magic to destroy these submersible warships, aka submarines. And while all of that's going down, Sophie gets captured by the Hind. And the Hind puts her on a boat, takes her out into the middle of the ocean, and basically does a Victoria on her, so to speak. Ties cement blocks around her, like, accurate. It's kind of weird. And, you know, just trying to get Sophie to say, who did she share her information with? Who knows? Blah, 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 blah. And of course, Sophie's like, I've told no one. She defends herself, like, I haven't done anything. And the Hind is like, whatever, and finally tosses Sophie with the cement blocks tied to her ankles over the water. I mean, over the edge of the boat into the water to drown her. And that's kind of the whole prologue. And so we know that Agent Silverbow gets away with the kids. Pippa watches Sophie's brother use his magic. So now she knows why Sophie was so determined she was saving her brother. You know, it's kind of one of those things. And then, you know, Sophie's relief and it before she dies is that she has saved her brother.
Yeah, she has a thought as she thinks she's going to die. In that moment, she says Emil had gotten away. It was all that mattered. He'd been kept safe. And right. So she tells she says, go to hell before. Right. So very, very Bryce of her.
Very,
very Bryce of her.
The Hind, I do want to read this because I did say this. A Dreadwolf, a hulking, dark-haired male, objected. We'll get it out of her. Mordok, the Hind's second in command, almost as feared as his commander, especially with his particular gifts. If you guys remember, we found out who Mordok is in the first book. I think. Or is it this book? Maybe it's this book. I don't remember. Dear God, you guys, my brain.
I'm going to say, that anyway. Is not ringing any bells, but you know what? That don't mean we didn't. It just means I, at the time, did not retain it as important information.
Yeah. She knew she was dying, so Sophie knows she's dying. I'm looking at the whole thing.
Yeah.
And the Hind walks up to her, and she's like, any last words? And Sophie just is like, go to hell. And Mordok is the one who actually shoves her off the platform on the boat and drowns her. And that's quite literally the end of the prologue. And it starts with part one, the chasm, which we will start next time. But I really don't want, I just don't want to go into too much more detail than that right now.
Yeah, because like you said, it'll come back, which is fine. I was just afraid. So Kim knows, I feel that I've been burned by the mercenary and Akatar. Where I was so sure that was going to come back. And it never did. And I...
At least not any time so far.
Yeah. So when I read this, I was like, Kim, if it matters, then great. But if it doesn't, like, then... Like, basically, I was trying to determine, like, do we even talk about the prologue? Because we were basically saying the prologue either had to be its own episode, like it is now, because it has nothing really to do immediately with chapter one. Or...
Right.
We skipped it completely, and we're just going to be like, go read it. But Kim said it matters, so here we are.
It does matter, because it sets up basically the bulk of the plot for the book and therefore, for the next one.
Therefore, it gets its own episode. But yeah, so now that that's been established, going back to, we were talking about, like, urban fantasy, contemporary. Mm-hmm. Okay, so my whole thing is the definition I'm seeing of urban fantasy is like, urban fantasy is a subgenre of fantasy placing supernatural elements in approximation of a contemporary urban setting. I think that's the part that, like, I would like to know people's, I think that's probably an interpretation thing, like, of an approximation of a contemporary urban setting. Okay, so what is contemporary to you? And I say this because, like, to me, that's why I don't love this, because in my brain, this is urban fantasy, where it's like, we have cars, we have cell phones, we have some version of, like, the internet. But then I was thinking about it, like, the Grishaverse has guns and electricity and a lot of things, but it doesn't have, like, cell phones and internet. Therefore, in my brain, it's not really urban fantasy. But then when I stopped and thought about it, I was like, I guess it kind of is, though. So then I was like, wow, even urban fantasy has, like, its own, like, branch off subgenres.
Well, a lot of urban fantasy is also dystopian. So when you think about the urban area, there's a lot of dystopian things going on. Not entirely, and not all of it. Yeah. Again, it really, but urban fantasy, it definitely has a more modern feel. Like, if you were to take out whatever is making it fantasy, like, you take out the fae or an angel, or if it's demons, whatever, okay? But take out the supernatural character, and you have a human going through this. It could be a lot of urban fantasy, I do find it's very, it's almost like film noir.
So then that was my point. So that's what I was about to say. So like to me, I guess
it's more of a mystery, darker kind of, yeah, I guess, tinge to it, which
So then that's what's interesting, because like I do not like this. But then it occurs to me that it's not that I don't like this plot. I do not, and maybe this is, again, this is just a me thing. I don't, my brain cannot put together, like, I can let them have guns. I'm cool with that. I can let them have, cars was pushing it, but we can have cars. I can live with that. it's like, to me, it's that I can't do cell phones and crop tops.
Gotcha.
Like, I realized that the breaking point for me, where I go, I my brain can't do this.
And not all urban fantasy has cell phones and crop tops.
Or whatever you call that. Whatever it was. Sunball. Or whatever the fuck.
Sunball.
Yeah.
We don't know if it's football, rugby, soccer, baseball, mix of all three.
But that was just me.
I don't know. Who knows?
But yeah, so like that's what I can't do, because I was like, wait, no, like I actually am really loving like the Grishaverse, which is arguably urban fantasy, but it's not the same.
Okay. They didn't have cell phones in the early 20th century.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's what it's based off of. It's supposed to be like it's fantasy based more off the idea of the turn of the century going like 19th, 20th century.
Right. Which they had electricity.
Right.
They had guns. They just didn't have.
Yeah. Some version of an urban fantasy. Yeah.
Okay. Urban fantasy is basically, I would say, 20th century on.
Sure.
Technically, it could be historic.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I was saying. I wonder if that's like, I wonder if there's a real definition for that, or if that's just like interpretation.
I'm not sure. I really don't know.
I don't know. That's what I tried to Google it real quick for us, because I wondered that, but I don't really see anything helpful.
I think of the Grishaverse, it reminds me more of the redos of the Robert Downey Jr. redos of Sherlock.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So then that was the other thing. So then I was like, so they're almost what I would call more like steampunky type fantasy.
Steampunk is its own genre,
which
though.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. But it sort of more fits almost that, the goal of that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, Grishaverse definitely does.
Yeah.
But
I'm saying, like, so then that's where I wondered, like, that's why I was like, well, is the Grishaverse and like Crescent City under the same urban umbrella? Not sort of, maybe, but not really. Like,
you know, I don't know. It's,
yeah, me either.
I mean, this book is definitely what I consider true urban fantasy. It's set in modern times. They have modern weapons. They have computers and the internet and cell phones and television. You know, it's very modern. You know, urban fantasy does do a genre. Like I said, I just finished this series of urban fantasy that I was reading while doing all this, because, as you know, I don't read one book at any one time. I read multiple books. And just for the record, people on Discord know this, I was doing a reread of this book while I had started Flame and Shadow. Holy crap, I was having a hard time keeping everything straight. My poor brain was like, what?
I do not blame you.
Do not recommend doing that, people. So just so you know, I was like, but I'm dying to get into the new book.
Right.
So my poor brain just was struggling to wrap itself around things. And then here I am. I'm like, oh, let me just toss in another book, because I really needed was a bit of a palate cleanser. I needed something.
Oh, sure.
And of course, what did I pick? I didn't pick something completely different to really actually do that. I picked another urban fantasy, which, it was really cool, though. I mean, the main character was supposed to be human, but she's not. We come to find out she's actually a god.
Ooh.
Yeah, actually, I thought of you, because the gods involved are the Greek gods. And one of the gods involved is...
Ooh, you know what? Love me some of that.
One of the gods involved is Hades and Persephone.
Ooh, you know what? Love me some of that.
I know. So anyway, it was a really good little series. It was really cute. And I sit here and make faces because I'm thinking, I don't want to say too much to detract.
Yeah, because I might read it.
One, you might read it, but two, it's not Sarah J. Maas, though we do talk about a lot of non-Maas fans.
Well, so that's what I was going to say. So we've come here to the end of the episode, and that's kind of why I wanted to go off on this tangent momentarily, was just kind of to touch on other things that, like, we were reading and find out, like, what our listeners are, like, reading and listening to, too. So we kind of want you to drop those, like, in the comments. Give us ideas,
please,
you know?
Tell us.
Yeah, go over to the Discord. I think we have a, like, cool, I think I have a couple different threads, like cool stuff, what you're reading, that kind of thing. Like, just throw stuff in there. Let us know what you're up to. And that's why I brought that up, because that's what I was realizing. Like, the more I was reading, the more I was going, I feel like some of these definitions of, like, what is these different, like, genres is kind of fuzzy. And that's what I was realizing. I was like, well, it's weird, because I don't, I was like, arguably, because, like I said, I'm wrapping up the Grishaverse stuff. And I'm like, well, arguably they're kind of under the same umbrella, but they're, like, super not at the same time. So I thought that was interesting, but I'm not you. I can't read, like, two urban fantasies really at the same time. So thank God they're not that similar. The other thing that I've been up to is I'm going back and I'm going through Bridgerton. Cause I've seen the show, I've watched the show, but I hadn't read the books. So I'm reading the books and I am so confused, because obviously a TV show and a book do not have to be similar. They can be loosely related. The book characters, in my experience so far, are so much more likable than the TV characters, which is usually the opposite.
Yeah.
Usually they make the characters more palatable for TV for obvious reasons.
Right.
But in this situation, the book characters are so much more likable. That's wild.
That's interesting. I actually should read them. I'm trying to go back and rewatch them. I'm not watching Queen Charlotte. I guess I could, but
I'm not. I haven't done that either.
But I am watching
one and two before season three comes out.
Because some of
it's
the
it's coming out in, like, May or something, right?
April. May, April? I can't remember. April, anyway,
I don't know.
The blurbs for it fascinate me. And I happen to like this character, the one that it's really about.
Yes, I agree. And that's part of the reason I was trying to get there as well, in the books. So that's where I'm at with my books. I haven't listened to too many podcasts lately because I've been doing a lot of audiobooks, so that's fun.
Same.
But I did also want to say that I did, before we roll into the drama of the TV show, I did want to say I watched a movie that I think most people who are into our podcast would also like. I told you I saw Argylle. I thought it was wonderful. I mean, it is crazy. It is funny and it is obviously a comedy going with that mindset. But it does such a
spoofy kind of like The Kingsman.
Yes. Okay. Actually, not to, like, do too much, but it's arguably the same universe, which is interesting. yeah, so that's funny. You have to watch it to see. You have to watch it to see how that's a thing. But the main character, she is an author and she writes, like, spy books, you know, and she's a very much like a Sarah J. Maas, where it's like people love her, people follow her on Instagram, you know, they're pushing her for the next book. And so I thought that was really funny. And like a chunk of the plot is about her, like, trying to figure out what she's going to do with her next book, and like how something that, like, stuff that's happening to her in real life kind of works its way into her book, where sometimes she'll see stuff and for a minute she'll picture her character as part of what's happening. And it's just, I thought that as, like, your writing process is, like, a funny thing to call out in a movie. And then, like, for once, usually I find that, you know, commercial or whatever ruins the entire movie. It shows you practically the whole movie in 90 seconds. That's not the case with this movie. If you've seen the preview, you only know, like, a third of the plot, which is even, like, which is cool, because that never happens anymore. Yeah, which never happens anymore. So the movie is just really, really, really well done. And I just feel like people who love books will love the movie because of the premise of how the movie is partially about books.
Fair. No, that's awesome. Last movie I saw was Wonka.
Yes, and we talked about that too, that it was very well done.
You did. So, like, I get all the people that are big Timothée Chalamet fans, and I wasn't a huge, I was like, okay. And then I watched him in this movie, and now I'm like, okay, I like what I'm seeing. He's he he has a very interesting and unique talent, and I can see why people feel the way they feel about him. As far as what I'm reading, I'm not just you've said what you've been reading. Now, one of the other things I've been reading, I've been doing a lot of contemporary romance just because I do need a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
And I need something that I can just not think about, including I've been listening to a lot of contemporary romance on Audible through my books on Audible instead of, though yeah. I've currently gone back. I just went back to Jane Austen because I got like so inspired by Bridgerton that on my Audible, I got, there's a BBC like TV thing where they've done all of Austen's books.
Yes, I have that.
And I just finished Mansfield Park. And can I just tell you how much fun it is to hear some of these voices that
I know.
I think of it other ways. Like David Tennant playing the obnoxious, horrible big brother.
Yes,
the bad brother. I was just like, oh, okay. I love it because I love David Tennant. I think David Tennant's awesome. Anyway, so yeah. So I've been reading to contemporary romance.
Sure.
I've been on a bit of a hockey romance kick. I've been reading a lot of
those are popular. I have not read any, but I know that they're popular.
Well, okay, so when I was in high school, my senior year, my boyfriend played hockey. He was a goalie. So I spent a large chunk of my senior year of high school at the ice rink. So I kind of get the whole hockey thing. So, and he really kind of taught me how to love hockey and enjoy it. So I blame him.
Yeah. Oh, my husband played hockey for a hot minute, so I get it.
So I do get the hockey romance. I enjoy it. I like to watch hockey. It's definitely hockey season. Not that I've been to any games in a very long time because Washington Capitals are very expensive games to
go
to now.
Stinky also. I do not understand why other sports, like you go watch, like football is outside, it ain't stinky, but like you get that smell stuck up in an ice rink and it ain't going anywhere except your nose holes.
Okay, yeah. So there is that. So
maybe other people do not notice that, but I do.
Again, dated hockey player. He was a goalie. They have extra stink. Stinky. Like their stuff is super stinky. So
yeah,
the smell doesn't.
Nose blind.
I have some nose blindness at hockey rinks, so that doesn't bother me. Anyway, that being said, I've been reading a lot of that, but I just finished the cutest. I have a real thing for Pippa Grant and
Sure.
I also like Meghan Quinn. They're probably two of my favorite, and I know I've said this before, two of my favorite modern romance writers. Love them, love them. So, but the one I just finished was a Pippa Grant, and she has this whole series, and it deals with this fake hockey team in Virginia, which kills me.
Oh, sure. That's funny. Yeah.
So I think she actually might be from Virginia or in Virginia. Anyway, I don't know. I may have to like go look that up sometime. I follow her on Facebook and on Insta and all. I love her. She's wonderful. But she, the main character, the one I just read, ended up being a secret royal. Didn't even know he was going to be royal because his family had been ousted off the throne. His grandfather had been the king of this little tiny small country and had been ousted out, kicked out, and they moved to another country where they became like upper middle class. And anyway, this guy was literally the bodyguard to a prince from another country. And he ends up in this book becoming named king of the country that his family is from. Go figure that one out, right? So, but it's this whole cute story. It's really cute, but it was super cute. And I've been reading a lot of contemporary romance. And then I'm rewatching Bridgerton. And of course, then got into my Jane Austen. And I just saw the cheesiest, cutest romance on TV, like Hallmark. Hallmark movies are their own genre.
Yes, they are. And you told me about it. And I'm so mad that I missed it.
So apparently Hallmark has taken it upon itself that February is their Jane Austen month this year. And so they are redoing Jane Austen. This weekend coming up, it's Sense and Sensibility, which looks fascinating the way they're doing it. But the one I just saw was called An American in Austen.
Yeah.
And it was a retelling of Pride and Prejudice. And this modern woman falls back, and she falls back into, because she wishes for Mr. Darcy, she falls back into Pride and Prejudice. And it's just this whole cute thing. Anyway, it's super cute.
I've told you 100 times, what is that one that I love and I always forget the title of? Oh my God. I can like picture the whole movie in my mind. Jane Austen. I tried to Google for you, by the way, while we were here. I tried to Google for you, where is Pippa from? No idea.
It's okay. She may have that hidden, but she definitely likes, I mean, she writes about all over, but everything that somehow gets tied into this hockey team, these characters, and they're based in Copper Valley, which is in rural Virginia in the mountains, which I just find is so strange. Anyway.
Yeah. I cannot remember the name of this movie, but that's okay. Somebody on earth will remember the name of this movie. I love it. I've seen it like 100 times. It's the one where this woman like spends like her practically life savings going to like a Regency, like Jane Austen vacation, like themed vacation. And it's just like the hijinks and nonsense that happens while she's there. And it's so great. And I love it so much. yeah. But if anybody remembers what that is, it's great. And if you do, send it to me. So we can talk about it and make other people go watch it.
Nope.
Okay, wrapping up, we're going to briefly, very briefly, because there's just not a lot to say, touch on the TV show nonsense for Akatar.
Well, first it comes out totally canceled. They're not totally doing canceled. It.
Yeah, it's gone. Bye.
And then
from a halfway now they're saying, maybe. Like where you and I saw it, by the time you and I saw it, I don't know where it originated from, but by the time you and I saw it, like, normal sources that generally are mostly correct were saying that.
Right. Like, even Variety was saying it's been
That's
canceled.
Right.
Which is kind of where I'm like, all right, if Variety's saying it, then I will actually say that it's probably canceled.
Right.
And then they came back and said, well, wait, no. Apparently, Hulu isn't going to produce it. So it's canceled in that sense. But they're keeping it kind of on the books because I guess they're going to try and shop it around to see if somebody else wants it.
So it sounded to me, and my interpretation of this is that Hulu does not want to admit that they're not doing it because she had an ironclad contract that pretty much said, if you drop this, you owe me so much money. Like, I will be richer than God.
Yeah.
And they were like, Disney, well, we don't want to do Hulu. That. Yeah. Yeah, so they were like, well, we don't want to do that. So I guess they didn't want to cancel because of that, but it sounded like maybe the agreement was, we're not truly canceling it, but we're also not saying you couldn't go find somebody else if you wanted
to. Pretty much.
And I think they're hoping that she does. That was my understanding. And it also sounded like the other thing that might have happened was that just because the original, whatever team they had together, you know, whoever Hulu had put together, maybe some of that, like, maybe Ron Moore is still with them, but Hulu just isn't. Like, there was some, like, there
yeah,
was no
I think
law.
Ron Moore is.
Yeah, so it sounded like it was, like, the whole thing was, like, there was no law that said it had to be Hulu plus Ron Moore plus this other group of people plus Sarah J. Maas. It's Hulu is hoping that Sarah and Ron Moore will go off and get adopted by somebody else, and they will let Hulu out of the contract. Is it sort of sounded right. Like what? Yeah. So like Hulu's not actively trying to like cast and film at this moment, but they also haven't said you're totally canceled.
Well, and I find it interesting because Hulu was like, you know, there's all this before the strike. Hulu was complaining that she was you were hearing from writers that they were finding she was difficult to work with. I can see that, but at the same time, I also get the very distinct feeling and from things I've seen her do in interviews that yes, she's not going to let them do is completely change the story to the point where it's not her story that everybody loves. And I think that's why people probably found her to be difficult.
Well, the other thing that you and I talked about a little bit while we were filming Silver Flames, and I don't know how much of it made it into the episodes and how much of it you and I were just talking offline. There's also a great example is what happened with Shadow and Bone and the Grishaverse. So on one hand, Netflix did it, right? Great. They got two seasons. On the other hand, they did it in a weird way where they basically combined Six of Crows and Shadow and Bone and used these characters in similar, like in the universe, in similar stories, but didn't strictly follow the books. And Leigh Bardugo was okay with that. She was part of the process. So that was a choice that was made, and they did not get renewed for a third season, despite being very, very popular. So that was an odd thing to watch happen as well. You have to wonder with Sarah J. Maas knowing that her books are going to do that anyway, that her books are going to essentially converge into the one universe, right? You have to wonder if there were things that kept coming up when trying to write the show where she would go, we can't, like, happens all the time. You and I talk about like Outlander and how like they bring back a whole character that was dead and like, which was ridiculous. And like, sometimes they combine two characters like into one so that you only have to like Lord of the Rings was famous for that. Taking two or three little side characters and just turning them into one character for a film because fuck, we can't handle all of this. And so I do wonder if there was some of that conversation in Avatar where they'd go, well, then we really need a mercenary and a this and a that. Can't they be the, and she's going, no, because I know where this is headed. You know what I mean? And just you couldn't get everybody on the whole same page, because arguably right now it's been like, you've seen this ping pong all over the place where it's like, well, Hulu owns the rights to ACOTAR, but Netflix owns the rights to Throne of Glass. And at some point, somebody's going to want Crescent City. And I'm wondering if there kind of came a point where she finally had to start saying to people, you kind of have to take them all or nothing.
Yeah.
And Hulu said, we're not stars. We're not HBO. We don't want to do that. Like, we just wanted to pump out like two seasons of ACOTAR stuff and be done with it.
Well, that, and you know, the other thing is that they don't want to spend the money in creating the world, and it's going to be an expensive, expensive thing. Like,
well, look at Amazon Prime is up to their noses in debt over Rings of Power, and it got panned.
Well, not only that, but they also did The Wheel of Time, which the two together has cost them some problems. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see who gets it. We'll see who, you know, I think either Stars or HBO are really going to be the only two places that are going to be able to do it and do it well.
I agree with that. Because so they're the only ones that are going to hand it off. Yeah.
Who kind of see how it's going to arc and how it needs to happen and how to tell that story. Because if you look at the Game of Thrones, even the spin-off series, which is the prequel series.
The other option would be, so like, I don't know, I know a lot about how film and TV work, but I don't know the ins and outs of a really good example of how this could potentially work, but I don't know how that happens. A good example is look at Bridgerton and like Shonda Rhimes, right? Shonda has her own everything. Shonda showed up to Netflix with her own everything. Basically just said, we're going to do this and we're going to do it like this. And Netflix said, okay. At least that's how it appears to me from the outside. And I say this because she has had such a hold of how that story has been told, produced, how many episodes, what timeline, what order, and has worked very close with the author to make that happen. So I would argue that that layout could work very well, where it's a one season, it's a short season. It's like six episodes per book, you know, and they've been churned out in a specific order per Shonda working with the author and Netflix trusting Shonda to bring in the money she says she will. You know what I mean? And that was also a very expensive production because of the stylistic choices for that show. So I wonder if that would be, if Hulu's not the right fit for that, but you wonder maybe a Netflix or an Amazon is, if Sarah and Ron Moore could get to that place where they went, here's how we're going to do it. We're going to do four seasons of ACOTAR. They're going to be six or eight episodes a piece. Then we're going to drop a special series of just like some Crescent City stuff or something. You know what I mean? Like, you could make it work, but I just don't think Hulu was the place. It doesn't necessarily have to be like Stars or HBO, but you're going to have to get the right team together for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So,
well, I think that pretty much covers all we know, which is nothing.
Nothing, not a thing.
But we couldn't ignore it. We knew that because it's just been everywhere. So we wanted to make sure we touched on it for a minute. No songs for you.
Nope.
Wait till the real episodes.
Yep.
And till then, yeah, exciting. We're in Crescent City. What a fun time, guys.
I would say welcome back to the crazy.
Yeah, I'm admittedly excited to shoot stuff again. I think we could have used some of that in ACOTAR. helped. So there's that. All right. Find us all in the normal places. Tell us what you're reading. Tell us what you're watching. Send us all the crazy headlines you see about the TV show, and we'll all giggle, and it'll be a good time.
Absolutely.
Our website is MassiveFansBookClub.com, Facebook at Massive Fans Book Club and Podcast, Instagram at Massive Fans Podcast, Pinterest at Massive Fans, TikTok at Massive Fan Pod, and don't forget about the Discord.
Please and thank you.
Don't forget, you could be watching us giggle and laugh and make faces at you if you watch on Spotify. Otherwise, you're going to get some weird pauses. My bad.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. The video edits really nicely for Spotify, and then the video gets converted into sound, which is still a better quality than we were working with before. Way less devil's vacuum. But pauses, because you can't cut pauses from video without it looking weird.
Very true.
So there you go. Okay.
We're trying to be more cognizant of that, though, and what we're doing and saying. So the hopefully the pauses aren't as bad.
Yeah. So there you go. There you have it. Okay, bye.
All right, bye.